Axel?
So one comment and one question. So interestingly, the two trials that recently moved the bar higher in pancreas cancer and in biliary cancers was good old chemotherapy. No targeted agent. It was actually very easy randomization, pretty straightforward, something we would not even dare to explore here in America. It could only be done by European groups. And we have new standards of care. Actually, we have one standard of care in biliary cancers we never had. So I think this is something that should tell us something about, sometimes in clinical trial designs, we might have to be more pragmatic and really address the clinical need. The question that I have is, you know, we talked about FOLFIRINOX in pancreas cancer. Now, I would assume that still the majority of patients presenting with stage 4 disease and pancreas cancer are not candidates for FOLFIRINOX. It might be a little bit biased and skewed view that we have, you know, with referral centers, younger patient population, but the average community oncology patient is probably still a candidate for gemcitabine. Or is there any patient still a candidate for gemcitabine? Is there a role for FOLFOX in these patients? I mean, for a long time, we've tried to move away from gemcitabine, and we were hesitant to do that, because we didn't have anything better. But is there time now to explore FOLFOX compared to gemcitabine in a community-based setting, being pragmatic in terms of clinical trial design, setting a new standard of care upon which we can then add new targeted agents better than what failed with gemcitabine? I mean, what do you think? Is there a role for FOLFOX in first line in patients who would be considered gemcitabine patients?
In first line, so in the poor line. Performance status patient?
Yeah.
So remember with FOLFIRINOX, the big debate is, well, is it just a FOLFOX? And I don't think it is just a FOLFOX, but I think we do need to explore treatments in the patients who aren't candidates for FOLFIRINOX. Again, I think the problem I have with gemcitabine is we haven't moved the bar forward even in the good performance status patients. So right. I think that's another disease where probably half of the patients can't get the treatment that we think is optimal because of their poor performance status.
So have you used FOLFOX in pancreatic cancer?
I mean, you know, sometimes I have patients who are sick from their disease, you know, who are kind of deteriorating from, not from comorbidities, whatever. And I've started with FOLFOX and then added irinotecan to form FOLFIRINOX, kind of as a staged approach to kind of ease patients into tolerability of chemotherapy. I don't know whether that's right or wrong. But when patients are sick from their cancer, I tend to give them the benefit of a doubt in trying to turn things around. And there's nothing better than FOLFIRINOX. Now, these patients who are so sick, they're not good candidates for FOLFIRINOX to begin with. So that's the dilemma I'm facing right now. And I would love to have data on FOLFOX in the initial setting to then perhaps even have a better rationale to use FOLFOX in first line.
So I think it goes to the question of whether you should sequence versus just put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, we talked about FOLFOXIRI or FOLFIRINOX in metastatic colorectal cancer. Other than the high response rate, the survival of FOLFOXIRI or FOLFIRINOX is very similar to sequencing FOLFOX, FOLFIRI, and FOLFIRI, FOLFOX. Of course, you get much less toxicity.
Yeah, but in pancreas cancer, you don't have a lot of time to sequence.
Well, in some ways, yes. I mean, if you look at the second line studies report survival and progression-free survival as good as your first line studies because you have a select group of patients. Once you are eligible for second line, you already have good biology. So in some ways, sequencing makes a lot of sense because you're going to select those patients who are more likely, or your approach is actually rational as well. Because if you start with FOLFOX in a patient who's borderline performer status and the patient does well and is able to tolerate FOLFOX, that means likely that the biology is better, then adding irinotecan in that patient would make sense. So that's an approach that actually rational. Sequencing may make sense. So FOLFOXIRI versus FOLFOX followed by FOLFIRI or irinotecan, or, you know, adding irinotecan eventually would make a lot of sense.
Rich, you had a comment?
So one of the general comments I would make is that we are seeing almost no new development in cytotoxics by pharmaceutical companies. And yet, most of what we're talking about is our framework for treatment is cytotoxics in GI cancer. You know, the only real things we're seeing are nanopackaging paclitaxel or, you know, delivering the cytotoxics we already have a different way. And so I would make a plea that we not forget that cytotoxics are the framework of our treatment. You know, the other thing I would say is that I do have a tendency to use FOLFOX in second line in pancreas cancer based, again, on relatively small European studies, but studies that do show some benefit. You know, a lot of patients don't really come to second line therapy. In the first line, a lot of the patients that I'm dealing with are older, they're in their 70s, and I'll give them a choice between FOLFIRINOX and gemcitabine. And some of them will choose gemcitabine. They'll say, you know, I want to try and do something, but I don't want to submit myself to the potential side effects of the more intensive regimen.
And the other thing that I think has affected this whole field is the proclivity for companies and researchers to add to gemcitabine plus. And of course, that's been the standard, and that's not inappropriate, but there have been dozens of studies, and with the exception of gemcis and biliary tract cancers and gem erlotinib, there's really no individual study that's actually held together, although there's some trends. There's some interesting new molecules that are also being developed with gem, and you wonder if they're going to have the same fate. Threshold has a drug which looks semi-interesting in a randomized phase 2, and I worry that some of these strategies might work with other combinations, and that gemcitabine doesn't play so well with other drugs, and that may be part of the problem.
So this is a field of engagement that's littered with bodies, not just that of the people afflicted with the disease, but the drugs that we've
absolutely
tried to use.
I'm curious from my colleagues, who's using nab-paclitaxel for pancreas cancer, and sort of when and with what, if anything?
Axel, what about nab-paclitaxel and pancreatic?
You know, I personally have used it in one or two patients. I know that Steve Alberts in our group is using it much more frequently. And I mean, we know that a phase 3 trial is ongoing. They keep upping up the sample size, apparently, of this phase 3 trial as they go. I know whether that's based on interim analysis and they haven't reached the p-value yet, or whether it's some other reason. I hope it's an active drug. I would love to see more treatment options. I would love to see something that added to gemcitabine actually works. But it would be interesting to see whether it would be our current standard for clinical trial eligible patient, which is FOLFIRINOX.
Getting back before Charlie comments, just in terms of the biology of pancreatic cancer, I guess when Dan Van Hoff again had presented the initial data on NAB, you brought up this issue of SPARC. Is that for real, or is there any biology?
I think this, again, something where I'd like to see the data from phase 3. And
there's
I hope there's no SPARC.
I mean, the disappointment to me is with that hint that there's no stratification for SPARC.
It's not stratified, but they're collecting tissue, I hope.
Correct. And the other real disappointment, for example, is the model of pancreas cancer that looks like the hedgehog pathway may be useful, and yet you have, frankly, negative studies just with hedgehog inhibitors. So really, we are not making progress.
Charlie?
Yeah, I was just relating to Axel's point about how the nab-paclitaxel trial has gotten larger and larger. So now we have to presume that with 850 patients, this study is now powered to find a very small benefit. And this is a point that Lee Ellis will frequently make at meetings, namely, why are we designing studies to find an improvement of a few weeks? So that if that study achieves what it's designed to do with 850 people, what have we really accomplished?
So let me play the devil's advocate on this one. So I agree in principle that small differences may not matter as much, but in pancreas cancer, I think it's something to continue building on. So we're talking about, you know, biologics, essentially killing so many biologics because we've actually used a weakling, gemcitabine, as the backbone. If it's true, although I still have my doubts that gem nab-paclitaxel is going to be significantly better than gemcitabine, but let's say, you know, the difference is reasonable, then it could serve as a reasonable platform for considering biologics adding to it.
But that would be only true if you really thought there was a biologic that needed nab-paclitaxel for it to be an active drug, because otherwise all you're doing, I mean, we're all speculating, and maybe it'll be wildly positive. But if it's another erlotinib, then what do you, I don't know that
oh,
that's
Oh, no, I understand. I do think that taxanes are probably more reason. So across different malignancies, gemcitabine does not seem to play well with biologics. Taxanes seem to do a little bit better, so perhaps.
But coming back to Charlie's point, I mean, if our current FDA regulatory environment allows you to just shoot for a positive p-value to get a drug approved, I mean, then we'll continue to see these trials that don't add value. And I would actually propose a very easy metric. I mean, let's say hazard ratio base. If something's below 0.8 and overall survival below 0.7 PFS, that is of interest. And everything else should not, you should not even power studies that way.
But unless hazard ratio of 0.8 for a pancreas study, that was erlotinib. It was 0.8.
Yeah, but right point, erlotinib was 0.83, 0.82. So that would have not cut the threshold. Yeah.
Well, I agree. These are the issues we have to grapple with. The other, what I foresee happening is the gem nab-paclitaxel versus gem alone will show a benefit, and the survival will be 7.1 months in the gem nab-paclitaxel. Here you've got FOLFIRINOX data with an 11 or 12 month survival, and they're both going to be standards. And this is really a problem for the field. Now, we did a study with gem nab-paclitaxel plus, I think, capecitabine. Mm-hmm. And we were just totally underwhelmed. Now, that was just our series. We saw no evidence of really much more activity than we might have expected from gem alone.
Now, Alan, when you hypothesize 7.1 months, you're not talking about difference. I'm talking about
total overall.
Yes.
I'm just throwing that out there. I'm saying 7.1. You can write it down. The control arm will be six or 6.2.
Not that it was 7 months better.
No. I'm saying 7.1 versus 6.2 is
that with or without Spark?
No. And the point is, if they show that the Spark subset does better, then I'm going to go back and say, if they really believe that, why didn't they stratify for that in the first place? That's what I find hard to believe about the whole story, is it doesn't resonate with me. If they really had the courage of their conviction, they would have acted on that information.